Hello and welcome to the latest Career Chats Executive Insights. I'm Susan Black and I lead Page Executive's Business Transformation and Change Division in the Midlands and the North. I'd like to introduce you all to Rob Keats. Rob is currently the Chief Transformation Officer over at Halfords and his second role is Managing Director of their Treads business as well. I've been fortunate enough to know Rob for a number of years, and as an expert in business transformation, I certainly know where to come to. Rob, thank you for joining us today. It'd be really great if you could just sort of chat us through your career trajectory and what you wanted to be when you were young.
Yeah, thanks, Susan. Thanks for the welcome. So I think when I was young, I was probably like most other people. I was either wanting to be a sportsman. For me, it was more an athlete and a swimmer rather than a footballer. And actually probably was just as much impacted by TV programs at the time. So I remember watching LA Law and wanting to be a lawyer before finding out probably just how much detail you needed to be one of those. So I didn't end up getting down that route. But it's probably also why I didn't have a strong view really of exactly what it wanted to be and ended up getting into consulting. And I spent 13 or 14 great years in consulting, actually, a real wide range of experience, very much cross-industry, so I was very much industry agnostic, but always with a strong customer experience and change angle at the heart of everything I did, which is really where I suppose I got into change and transformation in future years. So did that big four type consulting, 13, 14 years, ended up in moving into telecoms, a fantastic few years at O2, Telefonica UK. Again, quite a strong change in transformation background and roles at the time, but also was lucky enough to run the stores business across the UK, 450 stores, and real blend that whole customer and transformation experience by running a P&L and channel itself. And then, yeah, found myself moving roles within the pandemic, within lockdown, and joining the Halfords Group, as you say, is the transformation rolling group, and also looking after the performance cycling business, Treads.co.uk. So yeah, that's probably my whistle stop tour.
So I mean, sort of going back to your childhood then, and around this kind of sportsman and kind of law, I'm interested to sort of chat about the sort of traits that you find that you perhaps developed as a child around the sports, and how that may have driven you forward in your career, because obviously academics fundamentally important, but what about the sort of the traits that go alongside the academics to push you into not necessarily consulting or law or whatever, but what did you find was important around that, those kind of traits that you create, you developed as a sport, young sports person?
I think it's a good question. I think Probably I was part of a swimming team for a lot of my childhood, and that was a big part of, I suppose, the hours, many hours you were training up and down a swimming pool, then trying to do your homework, fitting other extracurricular activities outside. You had to be pretty organised and pretty motivated to be able to do all of it and keep on top of it all. So I think that getting things done, managing a lot of different things and a lot of the self-discipline, and you know, it can be very boring as well, traipsing up and down a swimming pool. So kind of keeping yourself motivated and that kind of resilience, I think I've held it a lot through my career. And probably just as well, very much you end up meeting people at all ages then. So you're very much, you know, if you're going on part of a swim team, you can be age 7 right up to 18, 19. Getting used to, you know, meeting and socialising with people of very broad range when I was quite young. And I think I've carried that on in terms of a big focus of me is on, you know, how you build different teams, how you can really get on with people, and a lot of the stakeholder management side you need within a change and transformation type role as well. And then probably just, you know, at the end of that spot, I ended up getting into summer jobs. So lifeguarding, swimming teaching, you know, being a 16, 17 year old asking, you know, adults to move their kids down from the deep end to the shallow end of the pool. You know, that learning those assertiveness and customer experience, customer service skills early on. So just probably some of the things you take from when I was younger.
And from your sort of parents, you know, presumably they were very kind of supportive and took you here, there and everywhere. Did they sort of, did they have a sporting background, or was it just something that they, you know, did for you? Or was it, you know, was it sort of something that they encouraged?
No, they were really supportive. Both of them different sporting backgrounds, but not the same actually. So it was never forced into to get into swimming or athletics at the time because they had. So no, very supportive of what I wanted to do. I think that I remember always them having a mantra, which is as long as you've done your best, then we'll be proud of you. So they were not kind of like always expecting you to win or think, but that built in of. And I think I definitely took this into my consulting career that, every day you felt you needed to justify that high fee you were being charged out at to the client. And I remember taking that every day doing the best you can and kind of built that through my career, I think. So, yeah, I think definitely from what my parents instilled in me, that spirit carried on into my working career as well.
Yeah, and I think that's really important, isn't it? That sort of narrative around doing the best that you can and sort of being able to reflect and look back on what you've done and say, that was a good job and I couldn't have done anything differently or better. So obviously, you and I have known each other for a number of years. We spoke in March 2020, and just as you were sort of serving the notice at O2 and joining Halfords. How did Halfords approach the situation, because obviously did they reach out to you at that point to kind of make you feel a bit easy about what was happening, or did you have to kind of reach out to them?
So I mean, I hadn't actually joined when COVID first kicked in, probably for the first quarter, but really clear that a lot of what they were doing then carried on and throughout when I joined. So I think, like many retailers, many companies, the unknown and what was happening more broadly, never mind customer behaviour in the market at the time, meant they had to readdress their plans. I think really clear, though, at the time was the whole number one priority was the safety and well-being of the colleagues and the customers. And I think that shone through with everything that was being done at the time. And I think a real mantra of, keeping the country moving. Halfords was also, although not the NHS or the police, was a lot of those essential workers were reliant on Halfords to keep them on the road and get them to be able to do what they needed to do. And I think that really was quite rallying in terms of internally that people's purpose was really clear during that period. And I think interesting, like many companies actually, I think Halfords has got a very strong strategy and purpose, but even more so in that period of time, everybody knew what their role was, which was to keep those customers and colleagues safe and keep the country moving with the services and support that was provided. I think though, like the uncertainty, stores were closed for a period of time, like many retail businesses. We saw a big shift, as most people did, to digital and online. And I think that also highlighted both, probably moved the business on 5 or 6 years in terms of some of the things that were in the strategies and plans. But also, a big part, of course, was making sure that the business was financially secure during that period to set itself up for the following year. So, quite a few different things being seen through, but I think really clear of what that core objective was during that period of time.
So obviously, you go into Halfords and it's almost like you've got, like you say, keeping people on the road, keeping people safe. Then on the flip side, you've come in as and are asked to be MD of the Treads business, which actually is about sort of lifestyle and health, and everybody's out there buying. So it's almost like two slightly different challenges, isn't it? One is about keeping people safe and on the roads, and the other is about getting people out on their bikes, and we all know that the market just exploded with bikes. So how did going in and doing those two different jobs impact you on day one?
Yeah, it's I think it was a fascinating period to join, an exciting period, in terms of it was very difficult on day one to go in across this side of a screen. I'm quite a hands-on person, quite like being around the team and the people, and obviously like any new business, you want to be out there meeting people face to face and building up the new team that you're taking over and getting to know people. So that was quite hard, and probably after 20 years the hardest period I'd been in terms of building new relationships up. But I think in terms of the opportunity, it was fantastic. I mean, the Treads business was probably up 60% year on year. So the volume of business that was being done was significantly more than obviously anything they'd experienced before. And the team had done a fantastic job just coping during that period. And obviously I think customers' expectations have changed. Everybody was focused on the digital business, which is what Treads is predominantly. Although we've got two or three stores in South Wales, we're still 95% a pure play digital e-commerce business as well. But like anything else, we weren't used to that volume of customers. So if being honest, we were getting things wrong. Our customers were probably quite forgiving, like they were in most elements of COVID at the time. But I think the team were doing a fantastic job to, you know, many people had never worked from home. They'd worked in the support centre probably 5 days a week. And suddenly we had the whole operation in terms of all the call centre and support staff all working remotely. So great transition over there. I think, as we said earlier on, probably move the business on and move the relationship with the customers on quite a few years. But we had to quickly act facts to fix maybe customer pain points that we hadn't seen before and really set those systems and processes up to be able to deal with customer volumes that were just, you know, unprecedented and hadn't been experienced before.
And coming from a customer experience background, would you say that understanding what you needed to do was easier given that situation? Or was it, because it's a completely brand new business, was it difficult for you to do that?
Yeah, I think like anything, I always tend to find it's around the team you build, you know, whether it's the industry or the company itself or the subject matter, you need people that understand that. And we definitely got those people that understood that. But I think you can bring also, I've worked in quite a lot of industries in a kind of customer experience type roles. And a lot of the same thinking is there. The problems may be different, the opportunities may be slightly different, but they're the same kind of things. And I just went in and worked with the team to look at a lot of the things they've got plans in place to fix and other things we just took a fresh look. I think I was very clear, though, that we had to keep going back and doing what was right for the customer. Very easy to say, but we had a bit of a mantra called every customer matters. Now, I don't think any company ever gets that 100% right. But we were looking at that end to end, whether it was in the call center, whether in the support center, whether it is in the warehouse, and going, how can we improve what we do end to end to get more and more customers happier than maybe some of the ones we'd actually let down during that COVID period? And some of those processes, like many organizations, have probably always been broken. But when you have the volume of customers suddenly going through, it amplifies maybe problems that are always there. And I think that's the thing for me, is in some ways we were being given a lot of really valuable feedback and insight, which, although you may have to apologise sometimes to those customers on their own, you then have the opportunity to fix it for everybody else. And that was what we were trying to capture. I think on the other side, we had some tremendous feedback. People were really grateful because there was a lot of businesses shut down at the time, not being able to get support. And the Treads team are really helping many of them, you know, still want to get around and about on their bikes, get healthy with everybody, you know, being in lockdown at the time. And getting on that bike, you know, a lot of the Treads customers, it's their passion. It's what they want to do. And it was really important to either get that new bike to them or help them fix and service maybe the one that had been, that was being currently, they were not able to use.
Yeah. So you're one of the only people I know not content to have one big job. You've got two big jobs. But you mentioned first, you know, when we were just talking there about how hands-on you are and about the team. And obviously you weren't able to be hands-on and get around. So how did you adapt your leadership style to engage with the team when it had to be remote? What did you change?
Yeah, I think Some of the basics are still there, and it was trying to, you know, I found in the first few weeks that having those introduction sessions with the different teams members, literally over the laptop, it was surprisingly okay. I think what you miss is, I mean, it is stereotypical, but it is those water cooler moments, those coffee queue moments, those times when you just walk past and somebody introduces you to somebody else. So you just have to work harder to be able to get up to speed on how the business works. And I think sometimes you can only see that when you're physically in the office. And although I think a lot of businesses, and definitely Treads and Halfords, have proved you really don't need to work face-to-face, especially if you're in a support function role nowadays, it's still harder when you don't know the culture or don't know how things work around there to get up to speed on that. So I think I have a lot of empathy for people that are new to businesses during that period. I think outside of that, it's getting back down to basics, you have to find different ways of really being clear on what everybody's doing at a point in time, and are you all aligned? And I think a lot of people put in probably lots of team calls more frequently for a period of time and gradually got a bit weary of that and wound back down off that. But I think that kind of thing was, how do you replicate more? You had to formalize some of those things that would normally have happened a bit more informally, just to make sure you can kind of stay connected, stay communicated, and make sure you're all joined up on what you're doing. I think, interestingly, I actually also think, though, some things that, you know, sometimes organizations have silos, actually this encouraged more people to work cross-functionally in that scenario as well, and come on to team calls that maybe hadn't always spoken to each other before. So there were some also great benefits that came off the back of it.
But why do you think that happened? What was it about, you know, the pandemic that actually made people want to work more cross-functionally?
I think it came back to that clarity of purpose. And I think a lot, I've spoken to a few people in other businesses as well. And sometimes corporate businesses, you know, want to do a lot of different things, and that ambition's great. But actually, what's really clear is when you can really get that one or two clear objectives and clear purpose that everybody understands in that period of time, I think then it proves to me again that those kind of purpose-led organisations is a massive part of engagement for people. And actually, if people are really clear on the outcome they're trying not to do, a lot of people don't want to be told how to do it, or, you know, exactly, you know, micromanage, but you're clear on the outcome you're trying to get to, I thought it was quite motivating for people. And I think that was probably a key thing of really supporting that crossway of working at the time.
Yeah. And nurturing that so that that doesn't change as we sort of come out of the pandemic. Yeah. So obviously your other day job is Chief Transformation Officer for Halfords. When I'm talking to clients and they talk about transformation, the variety of definitions of that is just vast. How do you define business transformation?
I think for me, there's a lot of confusion, as you say, about transformation and what's change. And there are theoretical definitions out there and everything else. For me, the transformation stuff really is probably something that your customers or the market would see is a differentiator, or is a significant change from maybe how you were working in the past. So something that really does make that business stand out within the marketplace. I think there's lots of things day to day that feel transformational to people working within organisations, but they're probably more, you know, optimising the business and making things maybe very different to how we work today. But actually still, would customers and the market actually see you any different? Potentially not. So for me, it is something really out there from it, probably in the mindset of a customer and a market side of things. Of course, that means financially, but it could be a significant improvement in either colleague engagement or even customer satisfaction and net promoter score as well. But something that would be being spoken about as different, very, very different.
So that's quite interesting, because you're sort of badging, like you say, is having a positive outcome for customers. So changing the way you do things internally for the benefit of the customer ultimately. Where do you think digital and technology fits into that?
Yeah, I think most transformation programs I've always been on have had a key digital and technology part to different levels. I think very much though, trying to hold on to that customer or business-led transformation that everybody wants and speaks about, I see, is always very hard within organisations, because traditionally, where there's a big systems program there, I mean, we've all seen the stats, they all either fail or take a lot significantly longer than, you know, everybody hopes or plans up front. But I think it's really important that keep coming back to, why are we doing this piece of work? What are we trying to get from a customer or the business outcome? And then how does the technology fit to that? But many a times I think the technology part takes over. It has a key part to play about it, but I think it's still a big part of how do you make that change actually land within the organisation, the way the colleagues work and are structured, the way it impacts the culture and the KPIs, and the way the processes and the customer experience work around it. I think sometimes businesses don't spend enough time on that and get carried away by the shiny new technology kit that may be delivered at the end.
So how do you win the hearts and minds of people on that transformation journey?
I think you've got to spend a really important time about understanding the why. And we talk about the case for change. And what does that really mean is, if we didn't do this, what is going to happen if we carry on as we are? You know, what opportunities are we going to not be able to take advantage out there for our customers or in the marketplace? I mean, to do that, you've got to get people believing that why. On big transformations, as the scope broadens potentially, as more and more people in the organization get by, you can lose the focus of why are we really doing this? What are we trying to get at the end? And I think that why and those outcomes, really making sure they're succinct and, you know, potentially can be spoken about in 30 seconds or written on one page and having everybody talking about it, says that then it's clear. I think if you can't do that, then it probably says that it's still a bit too complicated, and you're going to get different people because everybody's going to have a different perception of what that program is. And by default, you're probably going to not be managing expectations and disappoint a large part of the business as well later on. So I think you've got to spend a lot of time on the why and that alignment of the business to what you're really trying to achieve.
So when I'm speaking to a lot of clients, when they talk about transformation, what they're actually looking for is cost reduction and taking headcount out. But clearly that isn't what business transformation is about. It is about how you deliver benefit to the business, how it impacts positively on your customers, and how it, like you say, it differentiates the business from its competitors. And obviously technology is always a key element of that. So what would be your top five tips for landing business change programs?
I think the first one has to be around what I've just mentioned, around the why, the purpose, the why, those outcomes. Yeah. You've got to get those really clear. It can't just be, we need a new technology and we all need these new capabilities. That is a part of it, but it's got to come back to why are we really doing this? Because you'll be making lots of decisions in the coming months and years in that transformation program, and that you've got to keep coming back to that as the scope starts to creep and everything else. So I think that's really clear, that why and the outcomes, and get people excited that they really do believe they want that. Otherwise, at some point, it's not going to happen later down. I think probably it's quite a boring answer on this. The second one is, but planning. I think there are so many right to left plans. In other words, we need it by, and everybody then says that's the date, and no one's ever done any of the detail, I believe, and it's an aspirational date. And it causes more problems because people have never actually done a lot of the detail up front and are stuck by this date. Now, I think it's good to have to try and create the momentum on transformation by having a date that's maybe challenging and to move through to get some decisions sorted quickly. But I think you have to still, even in big agile type developments where people are moving from, you know, if you're familiar with waterfall type technology deliveries, you still need an element of planning within that to really set the program up. And I see too many programs failing because of that. I think linked to that as well, many transformations now involve third parties and suppliers. And there's a real kind of contradiction here. You've got a balance between one part is, of course, you've got contracts with those suppliers and you need to hold them to SLAs. But I've never really seen a big transformation work unless you treat those suppliers also as part of one team and really bring them in and let them have skin in the game, that kind of risk reward element maybe in their contract to actually deliver the same part of the business outcomes. So that use of suppliers, of course, holding them to what they've delivered because you've probably gone through a procurement piece to choose them, but very much part of the team is essential. The right team. There's very much a side of getting, of course, people who've got transformation experience or the technical or functional experience you need. But again, with transformation, I haven't seen that work on its own. You also need people that really are going to be the change agents within that business. And what do I mean by that? Transformations are hard and complex. So you need people that really have that can-do attitude and also are really good problem solvers. Because the one thing in transformation is, though I talked about planning, you cannot plan for every problem that's going to arise. It's never probably been done before, so you are uncovering things as you go. But you've got to have people that, when those problems arrive, can get the right people in the room and come up with some answers quickly to then make some decisions to go through. And I think probably the last bit I'd answer is, I think a lot of people think of the go live is when transformation's finished. And actually, although it's a big mammoth effort getting to that go live point, whether it's a business or technology type change, actually, it's about once you go live is how do you actually embed, improve, and really make it stick within the way the business works is where you need to build a lot of time. And I think a lot of programs miss that focus on the plan or don't put enough cost and resourcing for that phase, and really don't build in the contingency to be able to, you know, adapt and learn to things you've learned when it first happens. So they'd probably be some of my top tips for programs with what I've seen.
And would you say, I mean, presumably those things still apply regardless of the size of the organisation, or would you say for an SME or a smaller organisation, it's going to be slightly different? And if so, how?
I was lucky enough in my consulting career to work in many different industries, and I always saw the same kind of problems with why big programs failed or needed to be, you know, set on the right track, and also where they succeed. So I think the same kind of things exist, but I think on different, whether it's a small, an SME or a small medium enterprise or a big corporate, I think it's less that size, and for me it's been more their own individual instance. You know, is it that the strategy wasn't defined, you haven't got the stakeholder involved? Is it that the business case isn't strong enough? Is it that it's not differentiated? Is it that the technology team or the platform you're not using is strong enough? It's less to do with the size of business and more to do with the unique instances of the program you're trying to deliver with that specific organisation.
In your experience, when you've kind of gone in, whether it's consulting or when it's been OT or what have you tended to find that the board, that the executives understand what transformation is and how disruptive it can be and how costly it can be? Or have they tended to understand that, or have you found that there's a bit of a disconnect in terms of what they think is going to happen and what actually happens?
Yeah, I think sometimes people think of transformation as just being project management. And I think transformation is, it really is so much more than that, because you know, the size and scale of what you're trying to do there is probably multifaceted. So it has people, technology, you know, organization and process changes. I think unless you've been through one, by default, you don't know what's going to happen. And also many transformations can be different. I think most people expect it's going to be hard and complex. I think a lot of people expect the costs to go up and the benefits to go down and it to take longer. But I still think, you know, if you haven't been through one, saying, you know, this is expected, but we need to act fast on here, or this is potentially, how do you get people to think ahead on potentially what's going to go wrong and how you set up for the program for success earlier on? That's probably where, it's not that they're not capable of doing it, it's just if you've not been through it, you wouldn't know that those kind of problems are going to exist and those risks are out there. So, yeah, probably mixed depending on the organisations I've worked with and for, actually.
And how, I mean, obviously, we're in this post-COVID world. There's a number of organisations where, you know, people operationally have been working so hard, they're fatigued, you know, but obviously businesses are thinking, we need to do something, we need to transform. Would you suggest that the timing isn't right for organisations that have a kind of staff base that are fatigued, that, you know, they're not quite ready for it?
Yeah, I mean, I think none of us know exactly what's going to happen from a customer behaviour. You know, our customer expectations and behaviours we think have substantially changed. If you just take the basics of where they shop, we obviously know in many industries and organisations significantly more of move to the digital channels. Now, again, we're still seeing that there. Of course, in Halfords, a big part of what we do is a specialist advice within stores and garages. And of course, that's going to very much maintain. But I think in many industries, seeing that shift, none of us know what's going to happen. I think you have to transform now. You have to find that energy and capacity within the business. You know, is it by bringing in new people? Is it by changing the way you work, maybe within your business as usual organization? Operation and organization, but you've got to free up that time to be able to do transformation at the same time as run the business and optimize it at the same time. And I think that's going to be the organizations that win in the next few years. I think, you know, if you don't do that, I think you're going to struggle, because the organizations that succeed will be doing that in parallel. And using some of the learnings, you know, whether it's the customer behavior or many organizations, you know, for example, I know many organizations said, well, you can't move a load of people in physical contact centers and have them remote working at home agents. Well, look how many organizations have done that. And I know many organizations couldn't get business cases to make that happen. Well, it's happened, and I think many will stay like that over the next few years. So we fast track a lot of transformation and change that maybe have been on roadmaps for a few years. So it's what's the next bit now to take advantage of those consumer behavior and changes, but also set the businesses up for the next few years. We know that you know, the retail high street was changing anyway. We've got to fast track what happens in the high street in many industries, make it much more experiential, make it a place that people want to go and shop, and they're probably going to shop less frequently as well. So when they do go there, how do you make sure you can do that one-stop shop potentially and deal with all their needs at a point in time? So a lot of opportunity, but you've, I think, got to find that energy and that capacity to be able to transform at the same time.
So going back to your sort of point about Treads when you first came in, and obviously the customer experience, and they were very, they made allowances, didn't they, for things not necessarily going well. And you've just talked there about sort of moving contact centres, for example, to work remotely. You know, when COVID was kicking off, we were all very supportive. So I knew if I was calling my bank or my utilities, that the individual may be at home homeschooling, and I was, you know, I was happy to be on hold for however long. Now 18 months on, the patience wears thin. So how do you think organisations should balance the needs of the person who says, I want to work remotely, and how that's going to impact on the customers? What needs to happen to make sure that it, working remotely doesn't negatively impact on their customer experience?
I think, again, going back to one of the themes I've said a few times today is about being clear on the outcomes of that role. I really hope many I've been lucky to work in many organisations that have not been about presenteeism. So I've had that kind of flexibility of how I work. I think being clear on that is key. Remembering that flexibility is a two-way street, though. So it's what do you need to do to hit the business outcomes or be part of the organisation you work in, achieve what you want to with there? How do you still enable being able to collaborate with your colleagues? Yes, you can do stuff like we are today over the digital channels, but there's still some really important things, maybe creative brainstorming, thinking of innovation, and still building teams when you're new. And also, you know, if you're going through transformation in an organization, sometimes you may want to develop and change the culture during that process. You probably need that a bit more face-to-face as well. But I think the organizations that get it right are going to get that balance between both. It's not probably about how many days you spend in an office. It's probably being clear on what are the outcomes and really enabling people of what are you trying to achieve when you do come face to face. Because vice versa, there's no point everybody being in the office and being 8 hours a day on Teams calls to people that some are in the office and some are working from home. And I think probably organisations are going to have to plan better. So, you know, you as a colleague and you as the organisation can have to plan better of how you use probably less space within support centres going forward and head office. And then how you come together that you meet the different people. And probably as well that cross-functional working. I can see what will happen is you can imagine in the future everybody comes together on certain days a week or a month as their team. Well, how do you make sure you still get that cross-team working if you're not all in on the same day? You know, finance team are in there one day, customer team are in the next, marketing on the third day. How do you still find ways across the organisation to get that end-to-end cross-functional working as well? So a few thoughts there really in terms of planning, outcomes-based, probably agreeing some guidelines and principles how you work, but not getting into how many days and presenteeism. I think organisations should really move away from that.
And do you think that sort of that comes from the top? Because obviously, you know, it has been quite interesting to look at some of these organisations that prior to the pandemic, you know, the senior leaders, it was about presenteeism. And yet suddenly, because their lives are easier in a way because they're not having to commute, that they've sort of they've changed their way of looking at the world. How important is leadership, you know, in times like this, and what is mandated from the top?
Look, I mean, it's got to be essential because people are looking to you during that period for what you do, and you know, classic, do your actions match what you're saying? But also, I think just as much during that time, I found that people are also looking at what you don't focus on or what you don't say or do. And I think people are learned during that period. But I think, again, you know, the specifics and leadership of this is, if companies don't embrace it, the war on talent and the opportunities for talent and roles is going to change substantially. Because, you know, maybe you lived in Edinburgh in the past and you'd have loved to work for a company in London, but you didn't want to relocate. Now there's going to be opportunities where those companies in London potentially going to be saying, yeah, you can work from home 90% of the time or even fully 100% remote. So the opportunities of where people can go in the future are going to be so much there that if the company where you're working for at the moment doesn't provide that flexibility, they're going to lose them. So I think it's just essential that it starts from the top and the leadership. But for those that don't get it right, colleagues are going to leave businesses and move to somebody else that offers what they're now expecting in a post-COVID working world.
I mean, certainly we're finding as an organisation a better work-life balance, health and well-being. You know, obviously mental health is really important. Another part of our focus is diversity and inclusion. It's a key priority. How do you as a leader try to kind of create that sort of inclusive and diverse environment within and within your team?
I think it's something I'm constantly trying to get better at, learn about, be conscious of, I think is a really key thing, and actually talk about as well. I think, of course, it comes to the actions you do off the back of it, but you've got to start with those first few things. I always try and make sure within my team that I'm giving opportunities to everybody, regardless of who they are or their background or where they've come from. I think sometimes you talk about the makeup of the teams and being really conscious of how you build those diverse teams. But I think also one of the things I learned early on was maybe not the classic stereotypes of what a diverse and inclusive team was about, was surround people who are not like you. So really trying to make sure, you know, great teams come from differences of thinking, challenging each other to be better. It's great. Maybe it's an easier life to have everybody agree with what you say, but you're not going to get better answers ultimately by doing that. So I think it's just lots of little things, whether it's through, you know, looking at, are you rewarding and recognizing people from different backgrounds? What's your recruitment policy? Is the way you're writing a job advert actually already narrowing down or only talking to, you know, males rather than females or different ethnic backgrounds? So I think you've got to, right through the organization, it's something I'm always working hard to try and improve on and definitely haven't got right yet, but on a journey to keep getting better with that. But really consciously building it into every part of both before they join the business and when they're actually part of the team.
Absolutely. So, well, like, I haven't heard the Xbox going on in the background yet, but that makes me segue into the sort of the family life. So obviously your dad, how do you balance being a father of two with the chief transformation officer role at Halfords?
I think, like many working parents, it's a juggling act. There's no longer 9 till 5. It's very much on and off throughout the day. I think it's, like many people, some of the great benefits of the pandemic of being able to spend more time with your family and then your friends in later periods as lockdown rules were released. But I think it's constant balance and learning from when you get it wrong and planning so you can try and spend time and change your meetings around and building some spaces during the day. But yeah, I think it's always a work in progress. And when you feel you're not kind of trying to change things as quick as you can.
Yeah. And it's difficult, isn't it? Yeah. Because, you know, kids, you know, they are your most successful job, really, aren't they? When it comes down to it.
Yeah.
And I suppose to sort of, in terms of your career to date, what do you think you're most proud of?
I think probably being able to move from consulting into an industry role, and then very much, although I've done a lot of change and transformation, also taking on some of the big operational roles. So running Treads now, P&L, running the stores teams when I was at O2, just being able to take what I've learned before, luckily, like everything, taken advantage of an opportunity that's arisen, and then worked hard, asked for advice, had some brilliant mentors to then be able to hopefully do well in something that maybe 1 or 2 years ago you didn't think was possible or didn't quite see yourself moving into that. So it's probably the adaptability and just being able to take advantage of such a broad range of experience in my career. I feel very lucky for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, like you say, having had that exposure operationally, when you are then, you know, leading a change program to people that are in operations, presumably you handle the whole thing in a very different way.
Yeah, I think when you've done both a change and an operational P&L role, trying to bring the learnings of, yes, you've got to think strategically and how this fits together, but very quickly making it tangible. And what does it mean from the customer and colleague perspective? And how do you actually make it real? I probably didn't use that as one of my examples earlier on, but getting some momentum and getting it real that people understand how it's going to make their life better, again, really helps that engagement and buy into the change or transformation you're doing at that point.
Perfect. Well, look, thank you so much, Rob, for answering the questions. It's been an absolute pleasure to find out a little bit more about you and certainly the career today. And I look forward to seeing what happens next for you. So thank you very much.
Thanks again. Good to see you. Thank you.
To hear more from our guests, including their extraordinary careers and expert advice, make sure you subscribe to the Career Chats podcast, available on Audioboom, Apple Podcasts or Spotify, to get the episodes as soon as they drop.